All right, lots to cover in this last hour. But as promised, we are joined right now by a sports investigative and enterprise reporter for the Boston Globe, part of the Globe's spotlight team, which investigated the life and crimes of Aaron Hernandez, a reporter on Gladiator, Aaron Hernandez and Football, Inc. It's a podcast series from the Boston Globe and Wondery. New episodes released on Mondays. Bob Holler is my guest. Bob, it's nice to have you on. How are you?
Thanks a lot, Jim. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. What's up?
Really good to have you, Bob. Thanks so much. I was eager to talk to you. You know, before we talk about the podcast series, which is fascinating, Bob, can you go back a little bit? As you point out in the podcast, you were at Super Bowl 46 when Aaron Hernandez caught a TD pass from Tom Brady. He did this TD celebration that had him opening up a bank vault and scattering money. What did you make of that celebration at that time, and what was your perception of Hernandez then?
Well, I saw that and I thought, you know, here's another showboating football player, right? I mean, he's doing the old strip club thing, you know, make it rain, you know, throw the money up. And back then it was a big thing. And, you know, that's just who he was. I didn't cover the team daily. I wasn't a beat reporter then. I was helping out to cover that. So I didn't get, sort of intimate relationship with him in the locker room that some of these other guys did. By intimate, I don't mean close, but because he was never close with anybody really on that team. But, But people who did see him in that locker room saw the two sides of Aaron Hernandez, especially his teammates.
Right, now, you start that series by going back to his hometown of Bristol, Connecticut. In the reporting that you and your fellow Globe reporters have done, and the conversations in particular with his brother Jonathan, how would you describe life for Aaron growing up?
Well, here's the thing. You know, there's a lot of myths that have arisen around this story. And one of them was that, you know, when his father died when he was 16, you know, his life started to unravel at that point, that this beloved father figure had passed, Aaron lost his way, that his father was his, you know, moral compass, and that he sort of lived in this Ozzie and Harriet kind of life. The fact is that his father was brutally beat him, savagely beat him, and also that during that childhood he was sexually molested by somebody repeatedly as a child. And his father was an extreme homophobe. And so when Aaron, as a young boy, you know, wanted to be a cheerleader at one point, you know, his father scotched that idea right off the bat. But more seriously, he became involved as, you know, explored his sexuality and became involved with boys sexually as early as middle school. And so he was living this double secret life that if his father had known about, he would have been in serious danger. So he, from an early age, he was living two lives, and you can only imagine that the difficulty that poses for somebody. Of course, it doesn't excuse what he did in the end, but it would kind of give a richer portrait of who this guy was.
Bob Holler is joining us. So, what about that double life, Bob? Was that a complete secret? Did nobody know about that?
Well, you know, by the time he got to Foxborough in the Patriots, I mean, He certainly could be charming in some ways, and you know, people saw him, you know, playing with the children of staffers on the field afterwards, very charming. And but at the same time, he was hanging with thugs, and the teammates saw that, and they saw his erratic behavior in the clubhouse, in the locker room, some, you know, volatile, potentially violent behavior. He told you know, Wes Welker in his first month in camp that it mess him up. I'm using F him up is what he said if he didn't watch his step. And so these guys knew. And one player in particular, Dane Fletcher, told us he saw him with his thug friends. He saw Boston police detectives question Aaron and his thug friends around the time of that double murder in Boston. He was aware of the flop house and that Hernandez had taken him there and dropped him off. And that's a place where the Patriots actually helped Hernandez secure that flop house, which they've never admitted. And this place where he's storing his ammunition and drugs and hung with his Bristol cronies and ex-convicts.
Bob Holler joining us. That flop house, what that was, Bob, that was an extra apartment, right? One separate from his primary residence. So, I mean, you kind of got into this, but what was going on in the apartment? What was stored there? And the team actually helped him get that?
Right, so the Patriots have never really been forthcoming about their role in all of this. And, you know, 4 months before he killed Odin Lloyd, Aaron Hernandez sat down with Bill Belichick at the annual combine there in Indianapolis in a hotel room and said, listen, my daughter and my fiance, their lives are in danger. I want to be traded to a West Coast team. This is according to his agent. I want to be traded to a West Coast team. Belichick himself told the state police in a report that we've obtained that, yes, he did tell me that their lives are in danger and that he wanted to be more safe. Belichick never told the law enforcement any of this. The Patriots never told law enforcement any of this, that people's lives are in danger. Hernandez's agent also says that Hernandez told Belichick that he himself thought his life was in danger and wanted to be traded to a West Coast team to get out of there. And Belichick said no. So on top of saying no and not telling anybody, which would have possibly led police to solve that double murder and perhaps prevent Odin Lloyd's murder, nobody outside of the Patriots was told about that. In addition, Belichick said, hey, you know, what will help you find another place to live? I assume he was looking for a safer place to live, but what it turned out to be was this run-of-the-mill apartment 12 miles from his home where he, you know, he didn't even tell his fiance where he was living. He just sort of hung out there with his boys and got in trouble.
Investigative reporter Bob Holler is joining us. And then Bob, on top of all that, Bob Kraft has always said something to the effect of he was duped by Aaron Hernandez. Do you buy that?
Well, it's really hard to buy that. I mean, you've got to believe that Belichick never told the Krafts that this was that he had that meeting with Hernandez, and you have to believe that the players in the clubhouse in the locker room who saw him behaving in all these erratic and potentially violent ways never told the Krafts about that. Jonathan Kraft, the president of the team, the owner Robert Kraft's son, went on the radio soon after the Lloyd murder and said, you know, Bill Belichick would never, get a safe house for a player. If he were told that somebody's life was in danger, he'd tell our security chief and and would tell law enforcement. Well, that never happened. So either they never got the information or it's questionable what they were saying.
So, Bob, why do you think they didn't say anything? Why did they keep that to themselves? Why didn't they pass that along to law enforcement?
Well, you know, these guys are commodities, as you know. They're valuable pieces, and Hernandez is a very valuable player at that time. They had just signed him to a $41 million contract with a $12.5 million guaranteed signing bonus. That's a big investment. And to never mind not telling the law enforcement, they didn't even want to trade him or get rid of him. They needed him on their team, and It's hard to get into their heads, but the results are the results, the consequences are the consequences.
Bob Holler is my guest. Now, on the podcast, Bob, Hernandez's agent, Brian Murphy, tells a story about how that contract that you just mentioned, that after Aaron signed the contract, Murphy told him that he'll earn respect by how he plays on the field and how he lives off of it. Murphy said that Hernandez said that he earns respect with weapons. And then in testimony, Murphy said that Hernandez showed him weapons. When Murphy looks back on his role in Hernandez's life, what does he think?
Well, here's the thing about it. So Brian Murphy, he's represented more than 150 players. He's a pretty well-established and fairly well-respected, very well-respected guy. I'm going to give him credit because he stood up here. He met with me and said, listen, I failed miserably. My job is to represent Aaron and get the best out of him, not just sign him to big marketing deals and big contracts, but to make him a better person, better member of the community. And I failed miserably at that. So I give him credit for that. I haven't heard the Patriots. Well, Bill Belichick had a news conference after the arrest of Aaron Hernandez and said, listen, you know, we do our best to screen these guys, and sometimes we fail. In this case, we fell short. So if that's all they've ever said in terms of taking responsibility for their role in all of this. But Murphy did stand up, I think.
Bob Holler joining us, part of an investigative report in a podcast series talking about Aaron Hernandez. So, Bob, in July of 2012, Hernandez was in Cure Lounge with Alexander Bradley. Somebody spilled a drink on Hernandez. What happened next?
So 2 hours later, apparently he's brooding over this and just circling, waiting and stalking and waiting for these guys to come out of the bar. And he and his buddy Bradley ambush them at the red light, three blocks away from the bar, and they killed them. They killed these two guys for it's incredible to believe that somebody would be killed over this kind of stuff. But again, when Odin Lloyd was murdered, there was no clear motive for that either. It was just some nonsense about maybe, you know, he said something to somebody in the bar. And, you know, when Alexander Bradley, he shot his own friend Bradley in the head too, over what, you know, Bradley said was, you know, disagreements over, you know, little things. So some of this points to the fact that he was probably drunk in some of these cases. And, you know, he's a chronic, you know, high chronic user of marijuana, high is the operative word. But in addition to that, it makes you look at the issue of CTE, right? So we know that he had the worst case of CTE in anybody that ever seen at his age. And the issues that arise with somebody with CTE are, you know, rage, inability to control your impulses, your decision making. You have this emotional volatility, and finally, the suicide thoughts as well. So all that, I think, applied to Hernandez. Doesn't excuse it, but it, I think, it helps explain it.
I mean, Bob, this whole story is so unbelievable, and it's so insane, and there's so many layers. I can understand why a podcast series is necessary, so I'm doing my best to cover this with you in the few moments that we have. But again, the question keeps coming up. How did a high-profile guy like this keep getting into situations like this, and nobody in football knows? I mean, did people involved in football in high school, in college, in the NFL really have no idea, or did they just not want to know who this guy was?
Well, I think what we've found, and I think you've seen it throughout your career, that these kids, when they become elite athletes in high school, from that moment on, they're coddled, right? I mean, they're enabled, and it takes a very strong organization or executive of strong character to really step up and say, you know, we're going to suspend you for a year, we're going to throw you off our team, we don't want guys like you around here. But that's not happening. At Florida, the University of Florida, he got in beefs. He got in, you know, sucker punch. When he was 17 years old, they brought him out of Bristol High School in Connecticut before he finished his senior year, at the Christmas time of his senior year, 6 months early. And before that next semester, he should have been in high school. And instead, he's in a bar in Gainesville, and he sucker punches the bar manager over a paltry, you know, bar tab and ruptures his eardrum. No consequences. And then later he's involved at one of his best friends, the Pouncey twins. Somebody rips a chain off one of the Pounceys, and moments later, that person gets shot. And so Hernandez had nothing to do with the shooting, but he's involved in those kinds of scenes, and no consequences. Life goes on. He was suspended for a game for testing positive for weed, but, you know, then he gets to the Patriots, and again, they see these warning signs, these red flags, and life goes on. You know, the Patriot way is really, in a lot of ways, geared to winning, and what these players do on the field more than off it.
What about his teammates? What did they make of him? What did they think of him?
Well, he had very few, in fact, really no close friends on the Patriots. They saw the way who he was, and many of them steered clear of him. They saw his you know, his ex-convict buddies he was hanging out with, and Belichick himself saw. He told the state police he thinks he saw him with Ernest Wallace, one of his cronies from Bristol, Connecticut, who was with Hernandez when he killed Odin Lloyd. And Wallace is now in prison for his role in that as well. So they knew, and many of them tried to steer clear. I mean, Brandon Lloyd, who was a star receiver for many years in the league, he said, you know, I was warned the day I got there, you know, steer clear of this guy. But you can't avoid him. He's just he's a very high profile sort of attention seeker in the locker room, and he's all over the map. You know, he could be hyper masculine 1 minute, Lloyd said, and the next minute he's talking about cuddling with his mother and having his mother bathe him, and you know, just sort of this incredibly erratic, inexplicable behavior.
So, Bob, really quickly before you go, in terms of his sexual orientation, based on your reporting, what was his sexual orientation, and how well known was it?
Well, it wasn't well known, and you know, we didn't set out to explore his sexual orientation. We came upon just in the course of our reporting, we came upon his high school quarterback, one of his high school quarterbacks, who said, "Listen, you know, when the news came on that Aaron had died, this kid, young man now, former Marine actually, was with his father, and his father said, man, you know, there was talk about Hernandez had written a love letter to a prison lover, which we never have verified at all. But he said, geez, he wasn't gay. And the father said, and the son said, well, Dad, you know, I that's not true. I was involved with him way back then. So clearly bisexual in some degree. You know, what factored in eventually in the end was that, you know, there was the idea that he may have committed suicide because he's in prison where he, again, was trying to hide his sexuality. It wasn't a good place to be when you're, you know, living in a gang-controlled prison where you're supposed to be, one of these masculine football stars. And a local radio station here outed him, basically, 2 days before he died. So the issue of sexuality has come up in terms of, you know, an important issue in terms of perhaps the end of his life. So we did go down that road when this player raised his relationship with him, and it's fascinating to think about that. You know, there's no openly gay player in the NFL that we know of, and so Hernandez was trying to lead that double secret life as well in the NFL.
Bob Hoare is my guest. You know, Bob, the story is absolutely impossible to sum up in a few words or sentences, of course. But as you look at the totality of Aaron Hernandez's life, what do you see?
Well, I see a sad story. I mean, I see a kid who was, by all accounts, by every account, you won't find anybody who knew this kid before he was, through high school, even to the late, very end of high school. You won't find anybody who didn't say this is a happy-go-lucky kid, you know, doing his best, even while he was secretly being beaten and molested. This is a kid who loved football, loved life, and did his best. And things went terribly wrong. And, you know, he has, like I said, no excuses. He pulled the trigger. But when you think about all that's happened, and especially when you see the cases of CTE, a lot of these guys, you know, 16 guys have killed themselves in recent years, former NFL players. Each of them had CTE. Others weren't examined for CTE. But some of them, Jovan Belcher, as we know, took a life before he took his own. Lawrence Phillips was diagnosed with CTE. He was violent, criminally violent. So you have to look at some of that as well, as what the damage this game inflicts on the players who play it.
Bob Hoare is a sports investigative and enterprise reporter for the Boston Globe and a reporter on Gladiator, Aaron Hernandez, and Football, Inc. It's a podcast series from the Boston Globe and Wondery. Episodes were released on Mondays. As I mentioned, Bob, it's impossible to cover something like that in one conversation, but I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate that conversation, and continued success and good luck with the podcast series.
Thanks so much, Jim. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate that too, Bob. Thank you.